is everything. Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen. Kick Arts is New Zealand's comprehensive arts show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download at planetaudio.org.nz. Make sure you check us out at kickarts.org.nz to find out what's happening in the arts in your area, as well as being able to find all our past episodes, along with ways to support us to stay on air. Perhaps you might be a future sponsor. Tonight, we have all things art, theatre, books and music. And to kick us off, we remember the music of Judith Durham from The Seekers, who passed away last weekend. Here she is with Georgie Girl.
Another week in Zoom land, Emma.
It is another week in Zoom land, although, once again, I managed to get to a little bit of my theatre during the weekend. So another two-show day on Saturday last week. So, who did you see? So it was last week, because, of course, this is going to air on the 14th. So on the Friday night, I went along to Harlequin Musical Theatre's Interns Program, which this is the second time they've run it. So they let their under 25 youth committee pretty much run this program. And what it does is it lets three groups of people have a go at creating an original piece of work or workshop and present something they've worked on. So there were two new musicals and one play. And I'd been helping a little bit as a mentor. So what they do is they bring in mentors for the young artistic teams. Fantastic to see them in fruition, three very different shows in one night. And it was great to see so many new faces in that theatre. On Saturday the 6th, I went along to Kristen School's production of Newsies Junior, which they had done, because it was done very quickly in like a six-week period and 3 of those weeks were school holidays, they'd done it in a bit more of a concert-style version.
Nice.
It was really good. Newsies is such a fun show. And then on last Saturday evening, I went and saw the final showing of What We're Made Of, which was Massive Company's show, which we had interviewed Wesley and Millie a few weeks ago. And it was fantastic. It really left me asking a lot of questions about what are we made of? Because there's that scientific side of what we're scientifically made of. But then it's that whole, is it memories? Is it moments? Is it tragedy? Is it sadness? What is it that makes us who we are? And yeah, it was really, I came away from it feeling really great.
Oh, that's cool. Well, last night I did something a little bit different. I had a group of old friends connecting and we were going out for dinner in town, and I'd spotted during the week that the cassette bar had two Kick Arts favourites, the AJ Sound and Mary Ann Lee playing. So I said, let's end our night there. So the AJ Sound was on first, and a lot of his music, of course, was based around the time he got ditched at the altar. So his heartbreak stories come out in his music. And Emma, it was gorgeous to watch because the whole room was packed with friends, family, what I presume was his parents sitting in the front in their suit and tie at a nightclub in Auckland Central. And it was just gorgeous. At the end, he did a beautiful thank you to his girlfriend who's had to cope with the fact that he sung so much about his ex. And then on stage, he proposed to her and she said yes. And that was just gorgeous. But, you know, we talking later in the show about being humble. He was so humble. He met everyone, caught up with everyone. It was lovely. Mary Ann Lee took over next with a beautiful sound. Her band's grown since we've seen her. If you remember, we first interviewed her when she'd won a high school competition. She's gone a long way and it was a really fantastic sound. So it was so cool to just turn up to a venue and see our Kick Arts ones doing well. And I highly recommend the cassette bar for anyone that wants a bit of a relaxed evening with music. It's a nice setting to go to. This week, I'm looking forward to checking out the Ballet and Trolls at the end of the week. By the time this goes to air, we would have been there.
Fabulous. Well, as we keep saying, it's great to see so much going on right across the country. Some fabulous shows, fabulous theatre, some new theatre, some old theatre, some musicals, ballet, everything. But, you know, we've got to remember to keep in the front of our mind what are our COVID precautions, because it's definitely still with us and we're seeing lots of the odd post tonight's show is cancelled due to illness.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to have those backup plans and contingencies. But please, audience members, do not let that stop you from booking.
No. Absolutely. Book away. And if you can't make it, quickly put a post on Facebook. There'll be a friend or a family member who will grab your ticket and go. Keep booking those tickets. Well, shall we rip in?
I think we should kick it off for another great night.
There we go.
Our next interview is about a new piece of theatre coming to the basement in September, and I'm thrilled to have joining us in the Zoom studio Tatiana and Albert from Skin Hunger. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Lovely to have you. Lovely to be here, you know.
So, lovely to meet you.
We've had Albert on before. Actually, it doesn't feel like that long ago, although it might have been when you first went down to Dunedin. So not that long ago. So let's have a really quick catch-up. How's it been being in Dunedin?
It's been really good. It's been a little bit cold every now and again, but otherwise it's been really good. Got heaps done, wrote a play, wrote a television series. You know how it goes.
But I suppose being in a different city meant you could actually set your mind to it and get it done?
Absolutely, absolutely. Otherwise I'd just be twiddling my thumbs.
True. So now you're wearing a double hat in this production, Albert, because you're performing, right, and you're producing?
Yeah, putting the old acting boots back on and having a crack at that again. It's been a while since I rock and rolled, so that's really exciting for me and scary, which is great.
Nothing like challenging yourself, right?
Yeah. So I thought I'd produce as well, just to really make it a proper challenge as well. I'm producing, co-producing actually, with Edward Penner, who's just been freaking amazing. So yeah, it's really cool.
Very cool. So we'll jump over to you, Tatiana. Tell us, what is Skin Hunger all about?
Well, Skin Hunger is an semi-autobiographical play. I wrote it actually a few years ago, and it's been just going through this metamorphosis as I've been through my own personal metamorphosis. The story really started out of, I guess, desperation. I don't know, for lack of a better word, which is based on my husband's passing and everything that kind of just came to the surface after his death for me. Because grief is this massive thing that you think you can prepare yourself, but you can't. And I started writing and writing and writing, trying to process my grief. And then a play emerged, and here we are.
So had you written before the death of your husband, or is this a new thing for you?
I started writing the year before he died. So I was trying to get auditions and getting nothing because I'm from Brazil, I have an accent. And so it's just kind of like, oh, you can play the prostitute part. And so I was so sick of that. And then one day I decided to write something for myself, like a short film. And I didn't know what to do. And I Googled how to write a script. AUT Masters in Creative Write showed up, and I went from, oh, I'll just write a short script, to I'll do a Masters in Creative Writing. And by the time I finished my Masters, I had one feature film, and I started to connect with producers about my film, and that was when Jason died. And at that time, I thought, well, everything kind of died with him. And so I put my screenplay in the Dropbox, and there it stayed. And I just started writing to be able to, I don't know, kind of just get everything out of my chest onto the page. And yeah, that's what happened.
So now that we're going to be seeing the play actualized on the stage, how do you think it's going to be seeing something semi-autobiographical come to life before you?
Well, someday. So I'm learning my lines now. I wrote the play, but now I'm learning my lines, and I'm going, who wrote this? Is a lot of lines. And I'm feeling a little bit nervous because, you know, we need to be off book because we don't have a lot of time for rehearsals. And some parts of it, I still, yeah, really kind of touching my heart. And I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday going, I hope I don't corpse and start bawling my eyes out, you know, in the middle of the show. But it's been really interesting because it feels like I've been trying to wear different hats, you know, like there's Tatiana as the writer, there's Tatiana as the widow, there's Tatiana as the actor. And I'm trying to be really mindful of that. But I think for the first time since my husband died, I've been part of different other projects before. Yeah. But I think this is the one that I'm most excited about, the most enthusiastic about, the most inspired by, which is really weird because the thing that I get most joy of at this moment in my life has come from the greatest tragedy that I've been through. And so trying to balance those two things is a little tricky. Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, because last week we interviewed Pati from Tuatara Collective, who, of course, is doing a one-woman show at the moment at the basement, and she was saying that her safety mechanism is when she's playing herself, she's playing herself then, not now, and that's her way of kind of separating herself to allow her to go back in time to face the trauma that she's processing through in her play. And that's the thing, we need those safety mechanisms, don't we, to allow ourselves to be that person then and the person going through and then the person now.
Yeah, and I think this is very much, I think intuitively this is what I'm doing because I wrote this play because I wanted to see a play that back then, 5 years ago, I wanted to see this play. And so when I am getting into my actor's head, I am looking at myself 5 years ago. But at the same time, I'm also really aware that there's not only the safety for myself, but also the safety for my audience, because I know that there will be people there that have experienced grief. It's a universal thing. It might not be because they lost a husband, but it might be because they lost a parent, a grandparent, a child, a pet, their health, you know? So grief really can, somebody's grief can really bring up our own grief. So I'm quite mindful of my audience as well.
Yeah. So Albert, what is the role that you're playing in the production?
I will be actorizing as Eva's husband. That's the name of the lead character in the piece that Tati's playing. Oh, did right. I...
Okay, so is that a spoiler? Because now we know that you're going to pass.
I don't think so.
And are you going to have your lines down for the rehearsals in September?
You bet. Is there another way of doing it?
You know, Tatiana's throwing that gauntlet down that you have to be words down and ready.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll be there and good to go for that.
Now, Romy couldn't be with us this evening, but you've worked with her before, Albert?
We both have, Tati and I. In fact, very early in the first draft that I read, we were workshopping it with Tati, Romy as director as well. And that was a very different play back then. And then you read it, get it to fourth draft, and Tati had sent it through to me. Read that, and I was like, oh, why am I laughing at this grief? And it's, oh, she's written a funny play. It's, you know, it definitely has those moments of heaviness to it. But Tati's really tempered it with a wonderful lightness that doesn't detract from the events happening in Eva's life. So once I read, I was like, hey man, I got to be a part of this. How can I do this? So I was like, oh, you should do this. Oh, okay, then, cool.
Now, it's going to be on at the basement. Tatiana, if you can sneak out to the foyer after the show, what are you hoping that the audience will be saying as they're having their little conversations as they leave the basement?
Oh, if I could be a fly on the wall, what I really would hope would be for people to go, how can I figure out how to deal with the dark bits of in my life instead of medicating them or pushing them away or trying to suffocate them. I am a big believer in going towards the things that scares you, because I believe that what you feel, you can heal. And that has been my approach to grief. I did not want to medicate my grief away or drink my grief away. Well, maybe not all the time. But there are moments that you do what you have to do, right? But I would love for my audience to go, actually, I have never really truly processed that trauma or that grief. And this has given me the courage to, or I would also love, especially for women that are coming to my play, to have that sense of freedom. And I have had the privilege of having people in my life, or people that I observed being maybe courageous, maybe a little bit crazy, and their vulnerability and their openness gave me courage to find my own vulnerability and my own openness. So I hope that the conversations will be like that. It's like, I'm sure somebody will be like, she wrote what? Oh my God. But I hope that they will also be saying, gosh, that was fun. I had a really fun time. And then on their drive home, maybe kind of call a girlfriend or have a cry or go, how can I actually figure out how to deal with my own grief my own way? Because I gave myself permission to do that. So I hope this play will be a big permission slip for people to figure out their own way and knowing that they have the answers in themselves.
And they'll also be saying, how did they get so many dildos on stage? It's one of the scandalous moments.
Well, Well, that makes it interesting. I was just going to say, and then, of course, for a little bit of safety for your audience, you've also, on one of your shows, got Tu Rima Vibes there to help and have a bit of a Q&A session afterwards. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So I've worked with Borny before. He's a wonderful friend of mine and of Albert's as well. And I used to work in mental health. So for a few years, I worked at this organization called Changing Minds, which I had the privilege to really understand about what is important when you bring up a piece of theater of any kind of art and you want to touch on things that are, can be really triggering. It's really important to actually give the audience some kind of safety and not just say to them, here you go, 1773, if you have any issues, call away. I think it's really important for us and responsible, we are responsible to create safety when we open up dialogues that can be really difficult. And so, yeah, Tu Rima Vibes is going to be facilitating a corridor after one of the shows. We're going to be inviting audiences to go up to the dojo. We're also going to have a panel of three different amazing mental health practitioners. They're going to be answering questions because the play deals with some big themes of grief, of religious wounding, of sexual empowerment or disempowerment. And so I think it's a really important thing to have that right there for the audience. And we've been talking about, I went to a play last week, Hine. So, and they also have a counselor there, and they let the audience know at the beginning of the show, if they want to talk to the counselor, she will be available afterwards. And my husband was a counselor. So I have lots of amazing friends that I'm going to be shoulder tapping and say, hey, would you like a free ticket to come and be there as, you know, as a person that perhaps might be able to talk to others if they need. So, yeah.
And there's a bar there too for other kind of counselling.
There is, but that's something fantastic that Tuatara Collective have always done. And, yeah, it's a really good, you know, because their plays and productions have also touched on all those issues. Now, you've got a boosted campaign about to launch, Albert.
Yeah, the 15th it'll be launching, so it hasn't launched yet. Tomorrow, based on this recording, yeah, it'll be coming out. Just to have a look at the Boosted homepage, search for Skin Hunger in that, and we'll be there looking for, look, we're asking for $10,000. Our project is so hot, and we have so much belief in it. But also, it's just been so ravaged, and it's just really good to be able to pay people, you know? So that's what we're going to be doing with donations through this Boosted campaign, paying people and really putting the bells and whistles on Tatiana's incredible vision.
Fabulous.
And hopefully getting some budget for costumes, which we realized today we didn't have it.
Love it. Well, yeah. We will make sure that we post the Boosted information up on Kicker socials so that people can get that. Now, business end of the interview, tell us, when is the show on? And we've said it's at the Basement, so when is it on and where can we get tickets?
It's over at the Fringe Festival. So it'd be on between September 13th and the 17th. September 13th, 17th, yes, that's it. So, yeah, don't say you accidentally missed it. I just said it twice. And it kicks off at 6:30 at the Basement, opening night being the 13th. Tickets are ranging between $18 and $38 for a special donation ticket. But generally, they're going for around about $28, I think, is the standard. Don't quote me on that, but it's around about that anyway. I think that covered everything. Did that cover
and everything? Tickets are at iticket.co.nz.
What you said, Emma. Absolutely. iTicket.
Superb. Well, we are looking forward to seeing it in fruition in a couple, well, it's almost a month's time. It's not far away, Albert. Better get learning those lines. And wish you all the best. And like I said, we'll pop all the information about the show, where to get tickets, on the Kick Arts website and socials. So make sure you get along and support this new piece of theatre, listeners. And we wish you all the best. And thank you so much for making yourself available on a Sunday night.
Awesome. Thanks, Emma. What an absolute pleasure.
It was a pleasure, Emma. Thank you.
Like a moth to a flame, I'll pull you in, I'll pull you back to what you need initially. It's just one. This
That was the AJ Sound with Moth to a Flame.
Now, Emma, a little while ago, you put some posts out to try and find some new wonderful Kiwi talent, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And we've had some really good responses from people all across the motu coming back to us with, hey, I've got a track that I'd love to discuss or drop.
Absolutely. And one was a very young person who's beaming in tonight from the Waikato. Welcome, Rain, to Kick Arts.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And your music instantly caught my attention. It had a great sound. And you reminded me, Emma, of some of the young people we've had on the past, like the AJ Sound, and who have gone off now and are doing big things with their music. It has that nice sound to it. So, Rain, tell us a little bit about where did this sort of music journey start for you?
Oh, how long do I have?
Take your time. Tell us.
Well, I started off, started off busking in a little random area called Waiheke Island. I'm in Auckland. So yeah, I really wanted to make some pocket money. So went on the street, made like $20 of like super cheap guitar, probably only worth like $20. Made my first 20 and I was like super hooked. And then I grew up in a family where like all my siblings were really musical. So my brother had already been busking, my sister had already been singing for a while.
Were you busking with original songs or
Covers at that time, yeah. Before I started, I didn't really know how much I liked it back then. I was kind of scared to jump in just because my siblings were really into it. So got into it, then I was like, oh yeah, I really want to pursue this as a career. So after a bit of that, we moved to Rotorua, which is where I'm from. Started going to a school called Te Wharekura Ngā Sirumomai. Then I really started trying my luck with music, so I auditioned for this program called Urufetu, and it's part of like Pukana for Māori television. I was super lucky. I got the solo recording kind of opportunity. And then, yeah, so I got to record my first single when I was like 15, I think. Yeah. With and the person that was doing the production was the producer for Sons of Zion. Yeah. So I was like super lucky. I was like really digging his brain too. So did that, started moving on to stuff like Pow Pow Pow. No, I don't know if you guys have heard about that. Oh, so if you know Teeks from NZ, yeah, he was part of the first year of that program. So jumped into that. It's like a Māori mentoring program for musos. So you got some mentoring from people like Rob Ruha, Macy Rika, Seth Harpu, Troy Kingy. And a few more, can't remember all of them. But yeah, so did that, worked on my confidence. We started writing songs as well. So it's kind of when, oh, and Louis Baker. Yeah, he's one of them too. So yeah, got into songwriting then, went to Boys High, Rotorua Boys High. Started writing songs for like Rockquest and Tangata Beats, those kind of competitions. And I was lucky enough to find a band who, they were like my brothers now today. So we're still pretty close. And we took out a few dubs, I think we'd call it, and regionals, and we came second in national, so that was really fun. Moved to uni, which was last year, and beginning of last year, I did Pop Stars, or auditioned for Pop Stars, and that was probably the craziest thing, because I was kind of living on the TV set or show for like a month, so yeah, that was crazy, being part of what were we called, the top 12. Yeah, top 12.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was really cool. Came back to uni. Then I wasn't really auditioning, but kind of got called on for a TV show / competition called 5 Minutes of Fame.
Yeah.
On Māori television. I did this competition with my band, so really fun. I just love doing things with my boys. And we didn't really place anything, but it was cool. It was cool to go to Auckland and have the boys be filmed and all that, so
yeah. Well, I love hearing somebody who's grabbing every opportunity. You know, you and I have always talked about that over the years. We've grabbed everything that comes our way, even some that will work and not. Here's a young person grabbing mentors, grabbing auditions, going for it. Isn't that cool?
It's really cool. So if you could describe your sound, Rain, now that you are, because I'm assuming while you're at uni, you are carrying on down the writing your own stuff track. If you could describe your sound or the sound of you, your band, how would you describe it?
Oh, I feel like I've been changing quite a bit throughout the years. I'm never really too sure where I'm going, but I guess right now, kind of like a between pop and R&B, and I think that goes for me and my band.
So if we were to grab your Spotify and have a look at who you're listening to at the moment, who do you listen to?
Oh, just random. Just whatever I'm into. So I've been listening to like Bee Gees quite a lot lately. I don't sing like them at all, but just super into their songs. Bee Gees. I'm always listening to Drax Project. They're my favorite band. Yeah, it's kind of all I listen to at the moment.
You talked about your family being a family of musos. How do you think that has inspired you or sort of led you in a certain style of music?
Probably affected my style quite a lot. Even just the way I play guitar, it's kind of my platform for every song that I write and the band as well. Stems a lot from my brother, my older brother. He's like 11 years older than me. The way he plays, or he used to play a lot when I was really young, like 5 years old. And I used to think, oh, wow, it's so cool. Like, how can you play like that? And it's really cool because I can play like him now. So, but yeah, it's kind of the exact same style. So it really influenced me. Yeah.
And what other musicians have influenced you? Like when you're writing, do you think you're influenced by other musicians?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I try to channel a bit of Zane into my voice, but not really into the songwriting. I kind of, I don't know what I'm doing when I write a song. I kind of just, whatever I think sounds nice. Yeah.
So when you're writing, what comes first? Is it the lyrics first, or is it your licks, and then you kind of pull it together and then the words come later, or does it all kind of happen at once?
Yeah, it depends. Depends what's like kind of inspired me for the song. Like sometimes I'll hear like a sentence or quote where I'm like, oh, I really want to use that. And then so I kind of base the song around the words. But normally, like if I'm planning to write a song, that's like kind of when I don't plan to. But when I plan to, I'll start with chords. And then whatever kind of message the chords are giving me, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to write it about. Yeah.
Where's the long-term goals? Where do you hope to be in say, 2, 5, 10 years' time?
2, 5, 10 years? 10 years, I guess, is a good one. But I always say that I want to win a Grammy, but I need to be more active for that. But, yeah, that's the big goal.
All right.
It's an awesome goal to have, though, because how old are you now?
19.
Yeah. If I had a Grammy when I was 29, I'd be stoked.
Yeah. We used to ask a question on Kick Arts, and now you've kind of prompted it. You know, if you're standing at that Grammy platform and you're picking up your first Grammy, Adele's just introduced you, she's handed it over. Who are you going to thank for the music plays you out?
My family first, definitely. I always thank them first at any kind of prize giving. And then I guess any big influences that were a part of that journey. So for music in specific, I'd be like looking at my high school teachers that taught me music, all my mentors over the years, and my family.
And your boys.
Yeah, my boys, my band. Yeah, but they're my family, so kind of just bunch them in there, yeah.
Awesome. Now, we're going to play one of your tracks. Tell us a little bit about Moon.
Moon is... My brother and I actually wrote this during one of the lockdowns. Can't remember which one. And I think it's just about being in love with a girl. Just so that I don't look cringe, my brother came up with the lyrics, so shout out to him. But I did like the chords and stuff. And yeah, we were just like producing it. And yeah, just, and then I ended up finishing for uni for an assignment. So I never really finished my songs unless I wrote that. So it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Well, we look forward to tracking your journey over the next few years. We hope you'll stay in touch with us because listening to your sound already, we know there's some good stuff coming. And Emma, I wish our audience could see the Zoom screen and see what a humble, nice gentleman he is as well. Keep that as well. That's so important. Don't let the ego grow. We're going to hand it over to you now to introduce your track here on Kick Arts.
This song is called Moon by me. Not released yet, but hope you guys enjoy.
Trust us not to give up.
Take her to the moon where she flees night. Buy her something new, show her love she's mine. Trust you like I wanted to be trusted by her. When you're not together, it hurts. What did I do wrong? I was only young. I was holding on all along. All the effort and I'm still alone.
Still alone.
Try to be the one. Thought I was showing love. But I only thought of myself. My head can't take the truth at all. Take her to the moon where she flees night. Buy her something new, show her love she's mine. Trust you like I wanted to be trusted by her. When you're not together, it hurts. Dreams are meant to end. Gotta get out of this bed. And I know you had some different intentions. Try to move on. Take her to the moon where she flees night. Buy her something new, show her love she's mine. Trust you like I wanted to be trusted by her. When you're not together, it hurts.
Now, we get lots of books come across our desk here at Kick Arts, and this one caught my eye, and I have to admit to the author, it hasn't made it to the reviewer yet because it's been sitting on my desk to read, and that doesn't often happen, and that's because the book is called Believe, How New Leaders Step Up and Into Their Full Potential. Welcome to the show, author Brenda James.
Thank you. Hello.
Great to have you here. And so tell us, first of all, for our listeners, what is Believe all about?
Well, there's so many of us out there who struggle with self-doubt, and it can become overwhelming. And what I see in my work, because I coach a lot of new and emerging leaders, is that tendency to have self-doubt just kicks in and it can really take over. So the book is about introducing simple ideas that do take action, so they're not going to be a magic pill, but simple ideas that take someone through a process of learning to, you know, learning more about themselves, so getting to know themselves better, and then learning to trust what they discover and trust themselves, and then that encouragement in the third part about really stepping out and being that. So it's quite a process of really starting with self-awareness, because that is the foundation of all the work that I do, and taking that through into, you know, really feeling like they can step into their full potential.
Nice. Your title on your cover says How New Leaders Step Up, but it was interesting. I mean, I've been leading a team for quite a while, and I flipped through a little bit and went, oh, no, no, this is a nice chance to refresh as well. Now, I'm not being paid to promote this book, I should say. But, you know, because sometimes as leaders we get stale, we do the same old thing. I mean, I've recently just signed up to a course at Open Polytech on leadership and frontline management, and that's really just, nice. Just to refresh, really. Yeah. And sometimes it's nice to read something and go, oh, I'm getting that bit right. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. So I think you've undersold yourself. I think it could be for anyone in a leadership role. Who do you think will pick it up?
Yeah, well, firstly, I completely agree with you because I coach leaders at all levels, and I've seen a veteran leader struggle with the same thing that a new leader can, and even self-doubt. Now, we've come through a couple of years of significant change, and you put that change in front of any leader where there's no proven way of having dealt with it before, and there's many going into, you know, doubting themselves, not knowing how to deal with things. But actually, on that and who the reader may be, I've had two people today tell me that they're not in a leadership position and they have got as much from the book. So, you know, part of the reason for putting the title in the way it is and writing the book in the flavour that it is for leaders is, one, yes, I work with leaders in my coaching work, but two, it's about taking a whole lot of learnings that I've had over my life, and I really had to niche it at some point. You know, like I had to actually narrow it down to attract a certain audience. So I think Believe, the title, definitely catches attention. And so I think anyone who picks up the book and does what you did and has a flick through, if it resonates with them, they'll pick up the book and read further.
Absolutely. So, look, tell us, Brenda, a little bit about you. What's your background that's led to you feeling comfortable to write this book?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a very big story, my background. And it's, you know, filtered throughout my background is from my work experience side is, you know, HR, recruitment, definitely some leadership in there. Always working with people to take them to a next step, which has been interesting. I set up this business 4 years ago, and initially it was career coaching because that's what I've done so much of, but it really quickly moved into being at the leadership level. And so very quickly that became all the work that I was doing. Personally, I'm not like anyone else out there. I've had a few challenges and interesting situations in my life and experiences, probably from one end of the spectrum to the other. And you know, 20, gosh, actually, how old's my daughter? So 25 years ago now was when I first started looking at the whole idea of how I think and how that impacts on my life. So it's been a long time in the making, and life hasn't, you know, smelt of roses the whole way through since then, but I've been gathering over time tools to put in my own toolkit, and part of the book is pulling a lot of that together.
Absolutely. So who's inspired you along the journey? If I was to sneak in and raid your bedside table, which sounds very dodgy, what would be the books inspiring you or the authors that inspire you, either in a leadership space or purely in a writing space?
Oh, look, one of the ones that there's a few that stand out, actually. The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, and I often say his name wrong, so I hope I said it right. Louise Hay was one of my first books. If I look at this topic, You Can Heal Your Life. I was very, very inspired by that. Right now, I'm reading Stolen Focus by Johan Hari. That's a book I recommend to everyone as well, after they've read mine, of course. You know, looking at the topics of distraction and, you know, what's happening in our world. I'm just trying to think what else. A lot of business books, actually. I have to. So Leading with Gratitude was one that caught my eye. I haven't put my nose in it yet, though. In fact, I've got a huge pile of books beside my bed right now. No, without a word of a lie, because I have been writing for so long that I'm really looking forward to catching up on some reading.
Nice. Speaking of writing for so long, is there a sequel to Believe?
Oh, for sure. Kind
of feels like people will get excited and get motivated and then they need the next steps, the what next, for the not-so-new leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I haven't thought so much of the not-so-new leaders yet. And I have to say, when writing the book, I wanted to be very, very mindful of my clients who pay for the coaching work that I do. And I didn't want to give away all of my coaching structure in the book, which is why it's very much based on the foundation of, you know yourself, trust yourself, be yourself. I'm going to put together a gratitude journal because I think there's a really real lack of, you know, of options out there to have a lovely journal that you just want to pick up and write in each day. So that is something that I'm working on. But I think that the next in the series, still with Believe, may actually be wrapped around my personal story. So it's a little bit of a stepping stone into that. And then I'm very keen, and I'm just exploring this now, I'm very keen to write a version of it for our teenagers. So not necessarily sticking with leaders across the board, but writing different versions of it to reach different audiences.
That's cool. Yeah. Totally support that. Absolutely. So if you had a young new leader sitting in front of you, say they, you know, work their way up pretty fast and they're feeling really nervous, what would be one of your sort of top tips to a new leader about to walk into a new office?
Notice what's going up inside your mind. Notice what your thoughts are. What are you telling yourself? And because that's where it starts. And if you actually change that and turn it around and flip it on its head, because, you know, even me getting on this call tonight, it's like, oh, I haven't done this. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, well, actually, just look at the title of the book and turn that around. And that's been really handy, actually, working through this process. But yes, I would definitely say check in with what you're thinking.
Brilliant.
And flip it on its head if it's not positive.
Yeah. And as an older leader, I'd say, you know, read and think you can change too and try different ways.
Sure, very much so.
What worked years ago doesn't always work today too in this world of social media and software that's changed. You know, we have to lead a different way as well.
Yeah, for sure. We have to be very careful, don't we?
We do.
One foot wrong and it's out there.
Brilliant. Well, Brenda, we wish you every success with Believe. We look forward to chatting to you again when the next book is out. The book is out now, is that right? It's available in all good bookstores?
Yeah, the bookstores are a couple of weeks behind, but it's on my website, so leadership-reboot.co.nz. It's on Amazon and Kindle. Next week it'll be, the other copy will be on there as well. And it's also coming out in audio, which I've recorded myself, but we're a few weeks away. Audible take a little bit longer for it to show up. So just
that's okay. We're pre-recording this, so by the time this is out,
perfect.
People go and have a look and it'll be out there in one of those many places.
Perfect. But it's probably going to be Paper Plus is who's looking at stocking it. So
brilliant. All right, head to Paper Plus and support Brenda James with Believe. Thanks for chatting to us tonight on Kick Arts.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, you may remember a few weeks ago we had an interview with the makers of Trick of the Light Theatre's Troll. Now, last night we had a reviewer go along. Welcome to the show, Josh, to tell us all about it.
Hello, thank you for having me.
No worries. So some of you, just a quick reminder who Josh Downs is. We've had Josh on the show before to talk about things. Probably the last time was when you were directing Singing in the Rain Junior at Manukau Performing Arts that we had you on, Josh.
Yes, I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're a busy, busy person. So cool that you could fit in Trolls. Tell us what it is and what you thought.
Sure thing. So Troll is a funky kind of piece that this group has developed. Reading the program wrote was really interesting because they did it for the Fringe Festival 5 years ago or so in Wellington, and they just did it in their flat with the audience sitting on the stairs. So it's been like kind of a long development, and now they're touring it, and they have been for a while. And they kind of built it out of these technical aspects that they found, and you might gather that from the name of the company, Trick of the Light, that they're playing a lot with lighting, and that was really, really cool. And kind of the story that they found was about this 12, 13-ish year old boy who's sneaking around so that he can get onto his parents' computer and play on the internet in the 1990s. And then there's like a troll thing that appears and he has to fight the troll. And it kind of happens alongside some personal trauma that occurs in his life. I'm not sure how spoiler-free I'm meant to stay here, so I won't get too much into that. But yeah, it was a really, really enjoyable show, particularly for those technical aspects. I think that there's kind of a bit of a gap in New Zealand of shows that are holistically created with their design in mind. But this show was very clearly created kind of design first, and then they figured out what the story could be from there. There's so many really, really cool moments where you just have like a little mind-blowy kind of moment when they do one of these cool little lighting tricks and things. Yeah.
So who do you think it's made for age group-wise?
Well, I looked up some of the information they had online about it afterwards, and one of their kind of things about it was that they try to make it appealing to all age groups in some way, so it is something that children can enjoy just as much as adults. One thing I'll note about that is that there is just like a little bit of mature language, nothing too bad, but you wouldn't want to bring a toddler to it.
Yeah, I remember them saying as well that it was more that there was that the troll could be scary. So I think they were kind of saying 8 and up in an interview because they thought younger than that might be a little bit with the darkness and might be scary moments.
Yeah, and I think for an 8-year-old, they'd handle it fine because, like, there are moments where it gets a little bit scary, but there's also a lot of levity. Like, it's all through the eyes of this young boy, so it's very fun and quirky and dorky. Yeah.
So if there was something that you could take forward into your future directing, what was maybe something that it triggered in your mind that you went, oh, I need to remember that for the future?
Oh, it's just all the cool lighting tricks. That's something that I'm hoping to bring a little bit more into musical theatre as well. We don't get heaps of experimenting with that kind of stuff in musical theatre. So it's just so cool as well, just all of these little moments. Unfortunately, in the performance I saw last night, they had a little bit of tech problems, which is not a great thing to have in a technical show. So one of their projectors stopped working and they were having a little bit of mic troubles as well. So I didn't quite even get the full experience, but it was still very, very impressive.
Great. Fantastic. And Troll is on until the weekend at Q Theatre. So get along and check it out. And well done, Trick of the Light, for growing it from being on your staircase. Can't imagine having a group of people come into my house to watch a performance. Can you, Josh?
I don't know. It sounds kind of fun.
Keeps it intimate, but growing it into a bigger theatre. So, hey, Josh, all the best with your remaining shows for the year. You know, hopefully we'll have you on to talk about them. And, of course, if you're interested in having a review for one of your shows, let us know, because we've got people like Josh and Merrin who can come along and let our audience know about the show. Now, our next interview is something a little bit different. We haven't talked about an art exhibition or installation for a while, and this one is part of the Fringe Festival. Welcome to the show, Lynn Marie from Dizzy Pixie, to talk to us about her interactive art exhibition called Missing. Kia ora, how are you?
Hi, good, thanks.
So let's start it off. This is part of the Auckland Fringe. So tell us a little bit about what is Missing.
Okay, so Missing is an art exhibition that I've thought about doing for quite a long time. I have always been intrigued by missing people. So I thought I would come up with my own missing persons gallery. And I got over 140 people's photos. People sent them to me from the general community, mainly friends, people that I know from all around the globe sent me their picture. And then I wrote a little story about this person, a totally fictional character, a place setting. Some of them are quite dark, some of them are quite funny. And yeah, so it looks just like pictures of missing people, just like you'd see, you know, on a missing person's profile. But then the stories are all a bit kind of out there. Yeah.
So when someone goes into the art gallery to see this, how are the stories themselves shown?
Okay, so it almost looks like an A4 poster, just like a poster you would see either on the internet or in a police station or posted up on the wall somewhere. So it's just done out just like that with the person's photograph, age, date of birth, their name, last seen, what they're wearing, any strange features, and then a little bit a blurb about the last day they were seen.
So what are you hoping that people that come along to the exhibition will walk away or take away with them?
Well, one of the things that I really was interested in was all of the people who go missing around the world. I mean, there's a lot of people who go missing around the world. In New Zealand alone, I think there's over 8,000 missing people reported each year, which is a lot. And it's a subject that we don't really talk about, even though it happens all the time. And I was always drawn towards, do all the people get abducted or terrible things happen to them? Or do some people just simply kind of leave life, you know, and go and do something else and change what they're doing? And what I wanted people to get from my exhibition was that you don't have to be physically missing to be missing, especially over what we've just had with COVID, times like that. There's times in people's lives when we all go missing, I'm sure. Everyone can relate to, from dementia, depression, postnatal, menopausal, divorce, childbirth, teenage years. There's always times in our lives when we are mentally missing, not 100%. You know, in the present. And for me, I just wanted to kind of get that across to people that it all happens to us at certain times in our life. And also to put a little bit of humour on it as well, because I hope to think I have got a good sense of humour to people who know me. And I wanted to make it a little bit lighthearted as well. And for people to see something different and to be aware of other people around them and what could happen. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about you, because you're no stranger to the art world. You've curated and created projects with Auckland Council, Fresh Concept, the Splore Festival. You've even had your work featured in New Zealand Home and Garden and New Zealand Artist and many, many more. So tell us, what is the story behind Lynn Marie?
Okay, so I am actually a hairdresser, and I've always been really interested in kind of out there artworks and creating. I've always been extremely creative and love people, really. When I had my first child 10 years ago, I started making dream catchers, and all of my artwork was made from upcycled materials. Then from that, I went on to have a market stall, and then I started making more and more designs, and I started teaching workshops. I then went on from that to get council funding to do community workshops, and then I started applying for funding to do quite large artworks as well. I also worked with a great company called Fresh Concept, which are an amazing company based in Auckland, who do lots and lots of outdoor installments and artworks and community works. I've worked with them a lot and just grown really from there. It was never I never thought my artwork would become my full-time job, but it almost has. And also working with beautiful Wendy Douglas at Splore Festival over the last 5 years. And again, next year, we've curated the artwork for Wendy's Wellness, which has been a really amazing thing to be part of, a really good journey. So it kind of just went on. And the more people I met, the more people I got to meet, and then the more projects that came up, and it kind of just evolved from there, really.
Nice. And in the mix, some poetry, I believe.
Yes, I love writing poetry. I have always written poetry for a long time. I've actually had two exhibitions where my poetry has been featured, and in this exhibition, Missing, I have written a poem as well to go with it, which will be played at the exhibition.
Fantastic. What an eclectic mix.
Very eclectic mix. That is exactly the word that I would describe myself.
Fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about, were you into making and creating as a child? Was that something that, did you have a craft box that you went wild in? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did lots of creating and drawing and colouring and stories and cutting out, and I've always loved to do that. And when I went into hairdressing, I was really lucky to work with a lady called Jill Harper, who's an amazing hairdresser, and Tina Fuller and Amanda, and they really encouraged me to go into hairdressing competitions, which really fueled my passion again for creating. And you know, we could really go for it and make elaborate things, and yeah, I really got back into it. And then when I had my children, obviously I wasn't at work full time anymore, and I just had more time to do more artwork. Yeah.
And do you get your children involved now in creating your creations?
Yes, I do. My youngest little girl, she loves to create. Today I ran an art workshop actually for Auckland Down Syndrome Association, which was an amazing afternoon, and my little girl came with me and helped. My little boy, not so much. He's a bit like, oh, not more stuff, mummy. Now what are you making? He loves it, but he's kind of just a bit more blasé about it, should we say. Yeah, I think he thought everyone's house was as crazy as ours until he started going to other people's houses.
Now, when we track back to the exhibition coming up, Missing, you mentioned before that you were happy for it to be quite lighthearted. I read that you can even have your own photo taken and become Missing yourself. Is there a reason why you chose to go fictional rather than take the real photos and real stories?
Yeah, I thought one of the things I love doing with my artwork is, which I do a lot of, is to engage with the community. Because I think any artwork, if it's made with lots of people, you generate more interest, more of a buzz. And also it makes people be open to something a bit more quirky, something that they might not have thought of. Because lots of people, I hear it all the time, I'm not artistic, I'm not arty, I couldn't do that. So if you give somebody the opportunity, they will go for it. So when I put the shout out, you know, I got over 140 photos of people coming back to me. And I wanted to make it totally fictional. One of the things was, because it is a sensitive subject as well, you know, I mean, this happens all the time with missing people, and it is a sad subject. And I wanted to make it in the presence of people's minds and to the forefront of their minds, but in a way that it wasn't so dark and so gloomy, especially over the last couple of years with COVID. I think we all need a little bit of lightheartedness and getting back together and a bit of fun, really. So at the gallery, there is a green screen, so you can have your photo taken, and then your photo gets sent to me, and a profile, missing profile, are right for you. So everyone, you know, even if you're not part of it in the gallery, you can be part of it in a way. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and I think it's so cool because, like you said, also that reality of the fact, like, you know, that we may not physically be missing, but in our minds something is missing. And I think in the world that we're going through at the moment, I think there are a lot of times, and as someone that lost their mum to dementia, I so know what that is like when someone starts being mentally missing.
Yeah, it's really hard. And that's one of the reasons I've teamed up with Youthline as well, which is an amazing organisation based in Auckland, you know, for our teens to get hold of people to speak to. Because, I mean, we've just had global pandemic, we all know that. But as a youth, as a teen, so many young adults are going through quite a lot of tricky situations, and they do really need somebody who's totally out of their everyday picture to talk to. So I thought, just to kind of tie my whole thing together, my whole exhibition together, I decided to work with Youthline and offer awareness for them on any of my media that I'm doing as well, just to give it just a slightly different slant on the project.
So how can people find the Missing exhibition? And when is it on?
It is on the 30th of August to the 17th of September. It is at Beautiful Things Gallery, which is at 16 East Street, which is just off K Road, so really easy to find. You can go onto any of my media links, which is Dizzy Pixie Designs, onto my website or onto my Instagram or Facebook. And you can also go onto the Fringe Festival or Beautiful Things websites, media, to have a look and see where it's at. Beautiful Things is an amazing gallery. I don't know if you guys have been there at all or know about it.
No.
So Beautiful Things is a gallery which is run by Dave and Miriam. And they've got this amazing space, and they offer it for up-and-coming artists in Auckland, so it's not just a gallery, it's actually almost like a creative hub, and they've got a little cafe there, and everything is print to order, so it's really accessible and affordable for artists to be able to showcase there. And over time they're creating it into a place to go, like a creative hub. So if you haven't been there, go and have a look, because they continually have artists on show where they have a touch screen and you can just look on everyone's exhibitions. So it's really cool. Yeah, it's really nice.
All right. Well, we wish you every success with your exhibition and look forward to hearing what you get up to next. A reminder to our audience, you can find out all about Auckland Fringe at aucklandfringe.co.nz. Thanks for chatting with us tonight.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Emma, it's so lovely when people come back to visit us again on Kick Arts and we can catch up with what they've been up to since we've seen them last and listen to their next track or hear about their next show or book that they've written. And tonight we're welcoming back Steve Matheson from Luna Vela. Great to have you here, Steve.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So what have you been up to since we last caught up?
So I released my debut album, Imposter Syndrome. I've finished my next album, Mostly Instrumentals, which comes out in October, and I'm finishing my third and fourth albums, which I'm going to put out next year. So I'm just kind of going for it.
And in the midst of all this, making some great music videos.
Oh, thank you. It's been such a mission. The music videos, like when you're sort of kind of under the radar or like sort of not in with a sort of team or in this sort of funding and stuff like that, but I've just sort of embraced the challenge of like, all right, there's a possibility I might have burnt all my bridges last time I did music and I might never get funding, and that's fine, I'm just going to make it happen no matter what. And it's been quite good learning about making music videos as well and sort of like being involved with it. Because last time I did music, the drummer did all the videos, and it's been really cool. Like because I really like coming up with ideas for videos. I think that's the fun. That's probably more fun than making music, to be honest. Like they're just, it's like what's the most ridiculous thing we can do? Yeah, not that I came up with the ideas for 6:30 and that guy Noah did it all, but yeah. Anyway.
But I love that music video for 6 out of 10. Like, I love that it's you constantly. So, you know, you are the six friends. I thought that was very cool.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's sort of like that's kind of what we wanted to do. We wanted to sort of make it more kind of on, like, sort of about, yeah, because I mean, like, the whole concept of a 6 out of 10 friend isn't, like, mean-spirited. It's just, like, because I'm a 6 out of 10 friend to a lot of people too, you know? Rather than sort of make it a kind of mean-spirited video, we wanted to make it, yeah, back at me, so it's sort of, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
But before we went to air tonight, you mentioned that your next album has a bit more of a darker feel. Is there a reason why that journey or that path you've gone down?
Oh, this album, Imposter Syndrome, is quite a dark album because I guess a couple of the songs on the album, you know, like, I guess my sort of journey, like, I mean, this album only really happened when I got sober 2 years ago. So essentially it's kind of like a, for want of a better word, recovery pop album. Again, I just quit drinking and quit smoking weed and was realized that those are the things that were actually holding me back from doing music. Like, they would kind of sort of, I sort of got into that, unfortunately, I went down that sort of rabbit hole thinking that that stuff was good for writing music, but it just equaled net, like, fear and not getting anything done. And sobriety has just been, like, awesome because it's just made me realize, like, you just kind of make it happen. Like, you don't need anything and, you know, like, you don't need funding or a team. You just make it happen, like, however you can, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And that whole sort of perfectionism thing was what sort of stopped me from doing music in the past, because I was just like, nothing was ever good enough. And it was just more like a mindset shift that's kind of got, like, of just sort of letting go and realizing that, you know, I can't control outcomes or whether people like it. It's not up to me. I just do my best, show up, and if people like it, cool. If they don't, cool too, you know.
Fantastic. Fantastic in a, I don't know if fantastic was the right word. Now I'm going, oh, was fantastic the right response?
But it is fantastic because you've come out the other side of that journey and you're very honest about that.
And it's a journey, you know. It's like, I mean, New Zealand is like a difficult place to make music, really, because it's, but I've met so many, like, new friends making this album. And I've sort of realized that, you know, I can't work with anyone that sort of reminds me of my former self. Like, I can't work with, you know, like, out the gate party people, or like, that, like, I just have to work with positive people. And, like, my whole mentality shifted to where it's like, I want my friends to win at, like, I want to win at music and I want my friends to win, whatever winning means, you know, like, because I think in New Zealand, there tends to be two camps of New Zealand musicians. There's the sort of positive, like, yeah, go. And then there's, like, the competitive, resentful camp. Like, I guess you probably might not see this. It's sort of a little bit subtexty, and you just avoid the competitive, resentful musicians like the plague. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know why I went down that ramble, but
totally fine. But going back to 6 out of 10 friends, I just love the idea behind it. Like you said, I think too, the COVID climate is well at the moment.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a little bit tonight with a few other people, because a lot of their work has been influenced through those kind of things, that idea of what is a 6 out of 10 friend. And I think quite often we do tend to kind of disappear from our friends for a while sometimes. But, you know, we know that those true friends that are, we accept 6 out of 10 friends for who they are, right? And we know that they'll come back eventually.
Totally. And 6 is still, you know, good. Like, it's not like, it's not a 2 out of 10 friend. It's, you know.
Well, it's 50%, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a pass. Yeah.
So, Steve, what's on the plans for this last quarter of 2022? What are you up to?
I'm trying to figure out how to play. Like, so we did our album release at the Wine Cellar 2 weekends ago, and that was cool. That was, like, packed out, which was cool. And that was, you know, like, really humbling. And so just play some more gigs. Drop album 2 October. drop album 3 next year and then do album 4 and then leave New Zealand. That's the plan.
Oh, where to?
I don't know at this stage, possibly Japan, Australia or London. That's kind of, I don't know, like I can't really, yeah, like I don't know, I can't really plan whether it's with music or whether it's with work, but yeah, I have to leave New Zealand just in terms of, I feel like I have to be in a place where I can do music and work and like, you know, New Zealand's small and my music's always going to be weird. So it's not, you know what I mean? Like I need to find my audience.
Yeah.
So wherever that is. Yeah.
Maybe you'd need to test some of those albums out in those countries to help determine, you know, where's the pickup. I mean, we've had some interesting artists on here who've been so surprised at a Chinese market that suddenly totally embraced their music. They went over there and ended up doing incredible things.
Awesome.
So, sending it out and seeing where it goes, perhaps.
Totally. Yeah, just see what happens. Yeah, 100%. And just being open-minded, and even if it sort of ends up being more like getting into songwriting or producing, then that's cool too. Just whatever. Yeah. But,
the world is your soup can.
Totally. Totally.
So where can people track your music down if they want to hit you up and have a listen?
So on Spotify, on all the usual platforms, Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff. Yes, Luna Bella Imposter Syndrome and Mostly Instrumentals will be out in October as well. And Desperation Apocalypse will be out next year, my third album.
Brilliant.
Well, it's been great catching up with you again, Steve, and we wish you all the best for the remainder of 22. And we look forward to hearing from you when you have Destination Apocalypse ready to go.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks. Lovely to see you guys again.
No worries. Here now is 6 out of 10 Friends.
Six out of ten. And make sure you go and check out that music video. That's Luna Vela, L-U-N-A-V-E-L-A, and 6 out of 10 Friends.
Another fabulous show with, as we said from the beginning, a very eclectic mix from New Zealand music to art to made-up missing people. Wow, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I love it. And if you've got something on, we'd love to hear about it. Please fill our inbox up at info@kickarts.org.nz. Remember to give us a bit of notice so we can schedule you in for a few weeks' time. And by all means, dob someone in if you've heard some great Kiwi music or been to see something that you think everyone needs to know about. Flick us an email.
Yeah, we're still in Zoom land, so we are pre-recording. So it's not a live interview at the moment, so we're having to record a week out. So as we said, that little bit of notice is needed. Now, there's some exciting stuff coming up with Auckland Fringe being on. There is so much on. We are trying to post things into our events page on our kickarts.org.nz website. And, of course, we still would love some sponsors for our upcoming months to help us with our broadcasting fees.
Absolutely. So get in touch. Anyway, have another fabulous week. Stay dry, and we will look forward to kicking some arts with you next week.
We started this evening playing tribute to a wonderful musician that we lost last week. Well, of course, halfway through the week, we discovered that we'd lost another amazing musician and performer, singer, and Olivia Newton-John. And it would be totally remiss of us not to end the show with something from her. And, of course, Stephen produced Grease earlier in the year. This is one of my all-time favourites. It's, of course, Hopelessly Devoted to You.
Have a wonderful week and...
kick some arts.
If you're still listening, news just in. We've got a sponsor for the remainder of August and part of September. It's Arts for Development Trust, who are producing the production Blood Brothers at Playhouse Theatre later in September. So keep listening to Kick Arts to find out more about that production. It's definitely one of our favourites.
Oh, bright new day, we're moving away.
Why, ma'am?
We're starting all over again. Oh, bright new day, we're going away. When nobody's heard of our name.
Moving away? From here?
Where we can begin again, feel we can win and then live just like living should be. We got a new situation, a new destination, and no reputation is fine. Again now, we're moving house. We're starting all over again. We're leaving this mess, but our new address. 65's down the cell lane. What's it like there? The air is so pure, you get drunk just by breathing. The washing stays clean all line. There's room for the kids, cause the garden's that big. We'll take you a week just to reach the far side. Come on, Sammy, Mickey, you've all got to help. Would you excuse us, please? We got a pack. We're moving.
Tell her.
What's too bad?
Oh, isn't it sad?
Praise the Lord, he has delivered us at last.
We must have got the Johnstons on our way.
Clap your hands, grab your whistle, give it a blast.
Goodbye to the riff-raff, the trash and the trouble.
Goodbye to the scum and the scroll.
Wherever you're going, we hope you go knowing
that as far as you're going, won't be far enough.
Ah, good reason.
Just pack up a bag, we're leaving the rags. The wobbly world of just a frozen nerve glow. The two-legged chair, carpet so bare. You wouldn't see it if it wasn't for the O's. Sammy, stop it. Now that we're moving, now that we're improving, let's just wash our hands of this lot. But it's no longer fitting for me to be sitting on a sofa. I know for a fact was not your fault. Like Gerrit Hardy, we've all lost it all.
Bye-bye, we'll see you in a week. Don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art.
Catch up with the Bridge Zone.